Okay, welcome everybody. This is Micha Tsipri, your host as usual for PDF Network conference calls. Again, want to thank our sponsors AT&T and the Vivings Group for making these calls possible. And this week we are pleased to bring you lessons from the McCain campaign and its online ad program, and in general a close-in look on search marketing and the latest trends and tools and tactics to use. And I have sitting right next to me, Eric Frenchman, who was in charge of that program for McCain campaign, McCain-Palin campaign. He is the chief internet strategist for the firm Connell Donatelli, blogs over at Pardon My French, and in the past life also worked for AT&T and Paris Direct. We may touch on that a little bit. And like I said, this is a new thing we're trying. Eric was actually... lives in New Jersey, yeah. Just across the river, and we let him in at the border, and he made his way downtown here to the sumptuous PDF penthouse, the 13th floor, no, actually 14th floor, because we don't count 13 on Lafayette Street, and so we're very pleased to have him here with us. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
What I thought we'd do to start... because, you know, we've already done one call going back a couple of weeks ago with Josh Koster, who did a lot of the search marketing for the Obama campaign and for lots of Democratic campaigns, is but not necessarily everybody listened in on that call. First, I thought it would be good if you gave us an overview. What is search marketing, and why do you think it is such a powerful political tactic? Do you think people are using it to the degree that they should? Why don't we start there?
Well, just in general on search, it's a marketing tactic that you'd use, trying to find people that are looking for information and subjects and serving up the appropriate ad or trying to serve up something that's going to interrupt their searching process, to try and get information to them, drive them to a website, trying to get them to sign up for donations, or sign up for emails, or take any other action on the website, watching videos. Generally speaking, not just in politics, but for all corporate marketers, I would say that at least half, if not all, of your digital budget should be spent on search. And when I say all, it depends on how large of a budget you're spending on a monthly basis. If it's on the small end, say only a couple $1,000s a month, I would make the argument that all of it should be spent on search marketing. But there's so much that you can do with it. What makes it so powerful, especially in politics, is that instead of trying to put ads in front of somebody that they may not want or they're on a site that really has not much to do with the subject you're trying to market, search is people looking for information, and you're serving up the ads and you're serving up the information to them as they're looking for it. That's what makes it so powerful. The other thing that makes it so powerful, of course, is that on the paid search side, you're only paying when somebody clicks on it, so you're getting free advertising, free branding. Of course, the search engines aren't going to tell you it's free. But you have the ability to get your message across, whether it's branding or actions or donations, very cost effectively.
And just to make sure, when you say search marketing, do you also include in that contextual marketing? Because, I mean, everybody knows if you go to Google, type in a search term, some ads may pop up. But there's also contextual appearances that can either show up, I'm reading a blog post, and alongside it come up some ads that relate to the language in the post, or I'm on my Gmail and reading, you know, some newsletter, and somebody's bought a search term related to the content. Do you tie that all together, or are these two separate things for you?
For me, they're all tied together. For every single client, again, whether it's political or corporate, I recommend to everybody that it's just not paid search. It's also display, click-to-play video inside Google's content network.
Okay.
I don't limit search to just the text ads and the keywords. And when I say lowest level, that's not to mean that it's not valuable. I mean, it's probably the most valuable tool you have from a paid advertising perspective. But you could do so much within the content network, whether it's, you know, looking at pages on a website where people are serving up content that match the ads of the campaign that you're running, or you're trying to go after a certain demographic profile across Google's network. Generally speaking, I've always believed, this goes back to 98 when it really wasn't as sexy when you're doing search marketing back then. But 98, it's still the same thing, which is search is the great money equalizer. If you have enough money and you're facing a competitor, whether it's Obama in the political season or whether it's going back to my brokerage days, whether it's Harris Direct versus Schwab, the little marketer can compete with the big marketer because these tools make it available. And search is really, when you include the content, it's a great money equalizer.
Well, before we get to the presidential, because that's obviously one where money is at a completely different scale. If we're talking about a congressional race, a House race, what do you think is like a minimum level budget that somebody, where it becomes meaningful to talk about it as an equalizer? Is it $10,000 a month? Is it $50,000? What is your ballpark?
You know, for a House, the lower you go down from a presidential race down to even a Board of Ed, because when I ran for Board of Ed in my little town, I used content networking. I used marketing through Yahoo's network just to my own zip code.
And you get elected?
No, but I lost for other reasons. But, you know, going from the top down, I mean, even spending $1,000 or $2,000 a month for a congressional race can have an impact because, again, you're looking for people that are searching for information. If you're doing it, let's just say you're in New Jersey and you're out in the, I live out in Freeland Heights district. In that district itself, people are going to be looking for sports scores, local news, local weather. I mean, there's a different strategy when you get down to the congressional race because you have to do a little bit more interruptive marketing because less likely somebody's going to Google Frelinghuysen and a policy or they're going to hone in on a policy. There's just not a lot of buying. So when I get down to the lower level races, I try to expand a little more to be a little more interruptive at the local level. But for, local level, I wouldn't spend any money on newspaper ads. You can make the argument whether they spend any money on radio. But for a minimum, $1,000 to $5,000 on a local rate per month, you can have an
impact. And at a state level, let's take the Virginia rate that just finished.
You could spend, at a state level for a gubernatorial race, you could spend, for a month, $25,000,
$30,000. So this is still minuscule compared to television.
It's still minuscule compared to television. I think for a while it's going to be minuscule compared to television. But for print, direct mail, I mean, I'm the type of guy when I get a direct mail piece from a political campaign, I get very angry. Because I don't understand why people still spend that money on direct mail when you can take half of that budget and have a much bigger impact online.
Okay. Now let's get into the McCain campaign a little bit, and let's first talk about before Sarah Palin. Okay, there's sort of like two phases here because there was a period where I think McCain had to work hard to build enthusiasm at the base, and then there's a whole other period where the enthusiasm was there, and you had to figure out how you were going to channel it. Right?
Yes.
I mean, is that a fair description?
Yeah.
So, and this is partly drawing from reading from, pardon my French, your blog, product placement.
Thank you.
But the, I noted that you were talking about early on you needed to use search marketing to help drive people to McCain events. So give us an example of how you would do that in New Hampshire or wherever it was that, you're trying to get turnout for a speech or a rally.
Usually in New Hampshire was a different model because we didn't have that much of an issue trying to get people. Just be funny. But in other areas, I remember one time, I think it was out in Ohio, there was an event and I literally drew a circle within Google's network on the content side and on the search side, a little circle of where I wanted my ads to run, which is about a 60-mile radius around the event. And literally, we would buy words around the presidential campaign, events, local names. So say it was in Cleveland, the Cleveland events, Cleveland nightlife, Cleveland restaurants, Cleveland bars, and just trying to get people that are in the area searching for local information to put up an ad in front of them that said, John McCain's coming to your area on X date. Click here to get tickets. Click here to find out more information. And we would run that in pockets of events when it was needed. After, as you mentioned, after Sarah Palin comes on board, never ran those types of ads again. They never had any issues with trying to fill events.
Is there, this is sort of a side point, but it strikes me that if you're really a data-driven campaign, and I think most modern campaigns are getting more and more data-driven, that actually the kind of metrics that you're getting in terms of where people are clicking, what terms people are clicking through on, and what kind of click-through you're getting in terms of did they then take an action, did they then make a donation. How much, you know, without necessarily giving away trade secrets here, how much does this sort of feed the intelligence of the campaign? You know, this message is working, this message is bombing.
And
should it, by the way?
It's funny. It's sort of a double-edged sword. In the beginning of the cycle, I mean, we would test out different messages and we would feed back to them. This seems to be working or this one seems to be getting more donations, or we run certain ads. And we spent a lot of time revealing to the campaign which ads were working, what types of messages. Later on, when you get through the general, things are moving fast and furious, and the message is coming down. So this is the type of message we're pushing. This is how you need to say it, and here's some parameters around it. But it early on, it fed a lot of the information.
But do you think that campaigns should work harder? I mean, you think about targeting, right? And you've talked about the one-to-one, you know, utopia somehow, micro-targeting at that level, which I'd love to get into with you. But if polling is like a blunt instrument that campaigns use to figure out sort of how their message is playing with different pieces of the electorate they're trying to reach, with search, you have an even more fine-grained view into what people respond to or not.
I think the data's there to feed them. I think this time around, I think it was a little too early in the strategy and analysis process to actually feed a lot of that data back. I mean, we did have conversations about running petitions online and trying to analyze where are the people coming from that are filling out the petitions, and then say, okay, this zip code has seemed to play well, and we did do some testing around that, but there wasn't a massive amount of information that was sent back and forth saying here's the type of data that's working or not. We did do some testing around that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the data, I think you're right, I think the data's there. I think people could be looking at the information that you can get from online advertising and marketing online in general to understand where your pockets of strength are.
Well, even knowing, I mean, but presumably as you devised, and we should talk about rapid response now also, but you could tell, obviously, there's certain things that people are searching for,
yeah.
Right? And stuff can move fast.
Yeah.
I mean, the Obama campaign clearly knew that the whole Obama-Muslim question was a sensitive one. If you just looked at organic search, you'd see it kept coming up. They needed to have a kind of all-points bulletin approach to deal with that the best that they could. And so the same must go on here, right? As you're devising your advertising campaign, you're looking at Google Trends. You're looking,
right.
And so how fine-grained would you take that?
Literally, multiple times a day, I was on Google Trends, looking at information that people were searching on, and that, you know, getting into what.
But you can go down to the state level, down to even the, you know,
literally
pretty local if you want.
Literally, I would go down. Well, during the general election season, it was massive amounts of. At the national level, where are the trends? I mean, you had such big macro trends that were going on, especially around September 15th, the economy blowing up. I mean, there were just words that were just popping up and people were searching on. And so what we would do is we would literally build search campaigns around those words that people were typing in and literally build it on the fly.
Were you targeting only the swing states?
It's not as big of a secret as yes and no. There was a list that we received that here are the most critical states, and then we would get information about which states were moving on and off. But based on the budget, we would leave the expanded list up. The only reason why you saw, I'd like to tell everybody, the only reason why you saw an ad in New Jersey during the general election season is because I needed to see the ads, and I'm tired of going in using Google's tool to change my IP address.
Right.
So that was the only, otherwise New Jersey never would have seen an ad during the general election season.
Uh-huh.
So there was a larger list of states that we focused on. It just wasn't, you know, a small amount of, you know, but with a couple days beforehand, depending on budget, we'd literally cut back on some of the
And states. Was the budget something that you were allocated and it changed day to day, week to week, month? I mean, how did you figure out how you're going to spread this around, and roughly what were you spending?
Well, I like to keep that part a little bit of a trade secret,
okay.
But I usually go with whatever information you've seen, usually from Nielsen.
Yeah.
That was a little on the low side, but that's a good starting point if you've seen the paid trends. But from a budget perspective, you know, from day one we were working on a campaign, I can't remember a single instance where a budget request that we made was ever denied.
Uh-huh.
We spent it in order to, for the most part, to return on a donation.
It was mostly donation-oriented?
It was mostly donation, but we were given complete free rein. As long as we were within our target range, we were able to expand it. I really don't remember a time where they said, no, you can't spend that amount.
And what... you tell us how big your staff was for managing this program?
It was small. Usually it was myself, Jackie Hilbig that works at Comdon Hilly, Ryan Waite, and then there were the entire group of folks that were building landing pages, Mark Suhu, Mike Palmer. I mean, Becky's entire agency was involved. And,
right.
You know, again, if I need a landing page because I saw a certain trend that was happening, we built a landing page.
Okay. How many turns were you buying on a given day?
I lost track over 30,000.
So I have a question. What tools do you use to track? I mean, is it just Google's own analytics that you're using? Or, I mean, and given that you're running a, you know, not necessarily a 50-state campaign, but you're running at least a 20 or 25-state campaign, how does one humanly keep up with all of this?
One humanly keeps up. Well, first of all, the between Becky and the McCain campaign, the agency, we had tools in the back end, so we knew immediately when people were making donations, when people were making email. It just wasn't Google, Yahoo, and MSN conversion data reporting.
Mm-hmm.
It was a combination of that, and we had plenty of back end tools that were built really early on, way before the primary season that allowed us to track this.
Mm-hmm.
How to do it humanly possible? You know, it wouldn't be a shock to anybody that I was up sometimes 3 a.m. flipping on keywords and turning keywords off. So literally I was, most of us were working pretty much almost around the clock to keep it.
I'm trying to translate this down to a congressional race. I mean, is this something that your typical campaign manager can have the staffer do, or they should let the professionals like you do?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, obviously you'd want to answer the professionals should do it, but if you have a staffer that knows how to do, is well-versed in online advertising and search, it's certainly something that anybody can do by themselves.
Right.
If you have the time, if you don't, I mean, there are experts that can do this and do multiple campaigns at once. Just before I forget, during not just in political, but in the corporate world, you know, there are bid management companies. One is Dig, they're in New York, that you can use that will optimize the bids based on your cost per action on the back end,
right.
and using technology to make sure that you're hitting your goals. So, I mean, if you're big enough and you don't have the staff and you want to offload that to somebody else, I mean, there are tools that can make your lives easier.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of the campaign, we were the tool.
Okay. And how...
That was fun.
You know the Obama people had a big... I mean, their operation on this end...
Yes, it was huge.
Huge. And were they working at the same scale, as far as you could tell, or a bigger scale in terms of search marketing?
In the beginning, the answer is no, they weren't at the same scale. I don't remember when I started noticing... I'll even back up. Going back to the primary season,
Right. Most
of everybody that was involved that we ran with, we didn't bat an eye competing with them. And it wasn't that they weren't all good people. It was just that we had such a leg up on the search side and the advertising side that I didn't pay any attention to anybody else that was running, Democrat or Republican. And in the beginning, they weren't too much of a threat. I don't know when it was, but it was sometime in September when I started noticing that there was actually somebody on the other side that was keeping up.
Mm.
You know, we would turn on an ad, and I would wait, and I'd wait, and then sometimes I wouldn't see it, but then all of a sudden, sometime in September, there was an ad from them, and then there was almost always a fight to smear or fight to lie ad running, too, at the same time. So that wasn't there in the beginning, and they became quite a competitive threat during the season, but not in the beginning.
And were you trying to do the opposite? I mean, you know, so there they are playing defense on some of your ads. Were you trying to do the same? You know, in other words, if they were running ads attacking McCain on particular search terms, were you trying to play defense?
No, so it depends on what the words were. Some subjects, you know.
Let's take Joe the Plumber.
Joe the Plumber, no, I wasn't even worried about them.
Didn't touch that one.
Well, they got involved on Joe the Plumber because they had the tax calculator it was running. But from a mentality standpoint, because Joe the Plumber was our message and it was being driven to our specific landing pages that were built around Joe the Plumber, they're running the tax calculator, which was a brilliant message.
Right.
But you're running a tax calculator to the plumber from a relevancy standpoint. That's a little harder sale. Mm-hmm. So that didn't really bother me. During the whole, they were bringing up around the Keaton 5, messaging. That was something that, you know, we just let go. We mm-hmm. we didn't try and
engage
on that one, and it faded away like it should have.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, more in the primary season are you going toe-to-toe with somebody that's paying attention?
No, I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, here we are in the war room, if you will, which sounds like it was your kitchen table.
I thought you meant upstairs office.
Your upstairs office.
Yes.
Okay. We have
you can come over and tell me off, by the way.
Okay, yeah. It's got paneling and
lots of pictures of Springsteen. You'll feel right at home, don't worry.
I grew up on Long Island. Eric grew up, he's a New Jersey guy, so we're practically cousins. I guess what I'm asking is, does it get down to the level of you're buying a term, they're buying a term too, same term, and you see their ad appearing above yours, which presumably means they're bidding higher?
They could generally have higher relevancy.
And do you go in there and go, damn, I got to get on top of them here, or you just let it lie?
It depends. It depends on what the terms are. There were certain terms, as long as we were one or two, it didn't bother me that much.
Mm-hmm.
During the primary season, a lot of people focused on, well, Giuliani's one on MSN and McCain's two on the McCain term.
Yeah.
And I just went, well, that's not going to last too long, so I'm not worried.
Right.
But people would get upset if somebody's one and two. But in the search world, there isn't much of a difference between one, two, and three.
Right. As long as you're not six or seven.
As long as I'm six or seven, and that's what I would focus on. And, and as long as I was ball, like say an average position was 1.8, I might go, okay.
Right.
But I'm not crazy. You don't need to be one or two. And if you're not number one, if you're buying your own brand term,
right,
and you're not number one, you're doing something wrong because it's.
Do you worry? So I mean, I'm enjoying this because it's a chance to really get into the thick of it. But this is such an early stage in this kind of advertising, right? And right now it's like there's room for everybody. I mean, what you just told me is I can't box you out, you can't box me out. But let's just picture, you know, that everybody listens to Pardon My French and reads you closely in KK and so on. And 3 years from now, not only do you have the campaigns jockeying around key search terms that they think are important, but you have all these independent groups. And suddenly, it doesn't worry you, or could we get a situation where, you know, somebody's going to pay more, have a bigger budget, and box you out on a term where, you know, you really have to be. You don't want five different groups buying John McCain, you know, against the official advertiser.
There is a way to box people out today, which is if you have multiple accounts bidding on the same words. And
right.
I won't say when I did that, but the Obama campaign did I heard a little complaint into my friends at Google.
Uh-huh.
And so some things got blocked. There is ways, there is a blocking strategy that I have, but you need to have multiple accounts.
Presumably they can do the same thing.
Presumably you can do the same thing. But getting the
presumably it's not in Google's interest to let people do that. But
true. But generally speaking, in politics, you're right, there aren't a lot of people bidding on these words at the same time. I mean, you know, somebody at the T-shirt companies, which never really bothered me, and, you know, Cafe Press, being on the words, it didn't bother me. Occasionally, there would be, a call to arms, as I would say, from the left blogosphere about buying McCain terms, and, you know, I would get alerts. I mean, literally, you could not buy the word, you could not write a post that said McCain Google during the season, and I didn't see it.
Hmm.
And so every time I saw the call to arms, I just kind of looked, and I said, all right, they'll be up for a couple minutes, and then they'll be done.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 years from now, everybody could be buying these terms. And what's going to happen is you can't be as we weren't laissez-faire, but if you're laissez-faire now about buying words and letting them ride,
right,
you won't be able to do that in a couple of years because there will be more competition. You have to make sure that you're more relevant than somebody
right.
else. and you got to make sure that you have enough money to play in the game.
And for all we know, you know, the big, you know, the marketplace makers like Google may come to you and say, you know, if you purchase a 3-month period now, we'll give you special, you know, and
yeah.
they may come up with strategies
yeah.
to try and keep things orderly or not. We don't know. What is a realistic return on investment? I mean, for example, if the goal is delivering donations, you know, what are we talking about here?
It slides down, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go up from the top level. And a realistic goal for even a primary season, I would like to see you making $1.25 for every dollar that you're spending, basically getting your money back.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of people talk about search, and I'm one of them, that it's a good return on investment. It is your best return on investment
mm-hmm.
you're going to get from an advertising perspective. But trying to say you need to get 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, you're squeezing it too much. I would rather see making just enough money to cover your costs and then a little something else,
mm-hmm.
some other things.
Mm-hmm.
As you slide down the scale from a Senate race, you should be able to get around one. At a gubernatorial race, depending on who it is, you could get around one. But if you're getting down below into congressional races, if you don't have the message or you don't have the candidate, you know, you may not be able to get your money back.
Mm-hmm.
But again, most people should be trying to get at least a dollar back.
But you have to spend some time prospecting to even figure out.
Yeah, spend some time prospecting. Again, remember, this is all advertising.
Right.
And people have to remember that even though maybe you're not getting a donation, but maybe you're driving people to a page on your website where your message is, or maybe you're driving somebody to a video, or maybe you're driving somebody to sign up for as a fan of your page on Facebook. Those are all actions and returns on investments
mm-hmm.
that you could be making too.
Mm-hmm.
So a hard and fast rule, like you said for McCain, we had an ROI, but I mean, an ROI in the advertising world outside of politics could mean anything. Could be
yeah.
just visits to a certain page on site.
Right. Right. Okay. I got one more question, and then I know we're coming up on the halfway point, and folks may want to start getting ready to ask their own
questions. Well,
their questions
tougher than yours?
I have no idea. You want hard questions?
No.
I noticed, well, here's one that's sort of a hard one. I mean, I noticed in looking back at some of the rapid response stuff you were doing in the fall, you know, obviously the economy blowing up was sort of a big moment. Some may argue that it was maybe the turning point in the election in terms of where the trend line started to diverge. And I noticed that one of the things you talked about doing is advertising on people looking for brokerage type, you know, stock market listings and so on. And tell us a bit about what you did there, because it strikes me that at that particular moment, given what McCain was doing, that appearing, reinforcing McCain's name next to people searching for information on the crashing stock market might not have been actually a good kind of visibility. It might have been a bad kind of visibility.
I don't know. Well, first, on the brokerage side, because of my background for 5 years in the brokerage industry, it was very easy for me to come up with those words. Literally, between Joe the Plumber and mentioning the debate and literally the next day, I probably had 5,000 keywords, because this is like going back to old school. You know, I know stock tickers, I know economic terms, I know the brokerage terms. I mean, so it was easy to put them in. The blow up, you know, it's funny, I never looked at it like it was a problem trying to put McCain up next to. I mean, that was the turning point on the election, in my opinion. But the economy terms with McCain's message was still playing well with those terms. What was really dragging them down back then was really more along the lines of the YouTube videos, you know, that I saw around there. You know, the fundamentals of our economy are still sound. I mean, that was more problematic, I think, on his messaging. But having his economic message put up while people are searching for these terms and trying to say we have an answer, here's our solution, here's how we're going to solve it, was the right thing to do. You look at me quizzical. What happened in a phone conversation?
Yeah, you wouldn't have seen that in the phone conversation.
I think he just goofed on something. But
no. I mean, look, this is one of those, this is more about strategy than it is about tactics.
Right.
Right? So the tactic is, you know, go where people are looking, where
for
we
words.
Think we can inject a relevant message.
Right.
Right? And interrupt them in a relevant way and hopefully. hopefully get them to take a look at what our message is.
Right.
So at the moment when the economy is tanking, you know, you've got to be in there with the message.
Right.
What I'm saying is that, I mean, people said this about Howard Dean, too, right? Sometimes, you know, good advertising for a bad product doesn't help. It actually can hurt. So, you know, he may have been highly visible, but if he was a flawed messenger himself, and at that particular moment in, you know, those few days, whether it was McCain saying the fundamentals are strong or it's McCain saying I'm suspending my campaign,
right.
And then he goes to Washington and he doesn't get anything done, reminding people of his, what appeared to be, you know, off-message, inept approach to the problem. I mean, I think the question is, can you be hurt by the visibility? And you're saying, look, we didn't have a choice. We had to be in the mix. So better that you're buying these terms than not.
That's basically what I mean.
But do you know if they worked? I mean, could you make the case that us advertising on all those brokerage terms in that week or two in September was helpful? You know, how would you know that it was working as opposed to not working?
I mean, we saw, if I saw upticks in people converting, joining the campaign and
click
signing
through,
up,
right?
Click through, and then the back end metrics. And
you
it was,
keep the ad up.
I would keep the ad up.
Okay.
You are correct that there was this other, I was fighting some other conversations that were happening,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't like I was buying terms around,
right.
You know what I mean? It wasn't, I'm buying terms like Lehman Brothers, or I'm buying terms like a stock ticker for tea.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I know if somebody, the thought was if somebody's searching on those words,
yeah.
they're very much into the economy.
Right.
They want to, and it's a presidential election, I want to put my economic message
right.
in front of those people while they were doing that. So I think that was helping
okay.
to fend off that message. I mean, at the end of the day, we lost, so you could sit there and go, well, you still lost, it didn't really work. But,
yeah.
you know.
Defeat has how many mothers?
Because.
But the
one Jewish mother is all you need. That means a lot of mothers.
But to stay on this issue of rapid response and visibility. Okay, so I understand you're thinking, but the people who are really into the market may, you know, tilt more heavily Republican. We got to keep talking to that base. But McCain says he's suspending his campaign. So for that 24 hours, that's like a hot news item. And you can probably see that people are searching, right? But you're avoiding it? You're not trying to? I mean, how do you decide in this rapid response mode, right?
What's
you're
response
one of the
or not?
Few people who have done this,
right.
right? Because not many people are doing this kind of search marketing in fast-moving national races,
right.
right? So when do you decide to intervene? When do you decide to sit back?
You know, there's there was one other thing I forgot to mention on the brokerage side. I was getting feedback on polling information. I was being told that we're making headway in this demographic of people that we think were more into the economy
right.
and brokerage.
More inclined to respond to his message on it.
So I forgot that part. It just okay. wasn't conversion data. I remember getting a phone call late night saying, guess what? This polling data, your idea was actually working. But, you know, it was a tight link in with the campaign. I mean, I would email them and say, you know, here's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that I can respond to, not respond to? Do you care if I respond to it? I mean, again, there's only a few instances I remember even going back to the primary season where I was told to lay off a subject.
Okay, so you were taking direction from campaign leadership on which things to do rapid response.
I would tell them, I'm doing this. I'm going to do this. Is there a problem with this?
No, and what I'm trying to understand is, do you trust that those guys' instincts on rapid response, which are instincts that they have from dealing with mainstream media, television, newspapers, right? Which they think of as the places that are which frame the news, right? And the reason why you have to do rapid response is you can't let the frame get away from
right,
you.
Right,
okay?
Exactly.
Is the online space different? Do we follow the New York Times and the TV, you know, the way everybody else does? Or is online faster and beginning to change the flow? If anything, you could make the argument that
online.
The way opinion moves now in the Twitter age, which we didn't quite
right.
have as much as we have now, that even more that waiting to see how the newspapers are framing something or the evening news is getting behind the curve.
You can't wait. A lot of the news starts, again, pre-Twitter even. A lot of the news started online. Either it was some blog breaking a story, somebody writing something, even a story maybe that's put up on the New York Times before it gets spread out. People will start searching it, or they hear it on the radio, they'll go home and search on it. So I think a lot of the action starts online, and a lot of the action starts on those trends, and you can see them. And now with Twitter, you literally have to watch the hashtags to see what's being said, because that'll show up before it shows up on trends.
And that's a change from a year ago.
It's a change from, you know, 6 months ago.
Very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. All right. Let's open up the call. If you have a question for Eric Frenchman, I have a few more, and I always save a few just in case. But if you have a question, uncloak yourself, unmute, and say your name and ask your question.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, we never know whether people have. Oh, we have a question here on the text. Michael Leibovich. Michael, if you want to get on and say your question, otherwise I'll read it for you. All right, the question from Michael Leibovich. Can you elaborate more on the strategy you would employ for down-ticket races where people are not searching for information on the candidate? All right,
sure.
So this is your, you know, they don't know who their
people
don't know their city councilman's name, but you want to somehow
interrupt
get
them.
In there on a municipal or county level thing.
What you do on a very low level, a very small race like that, is that you're obviously buying their names,
mm-hmm.
you're buying your competitors' names. Okay, so you have a branded campaign and you have a competitive campaign. And then what I recommend doing is you start buying words around the town, district. You know, again, use my little old board ed example. I'm buying terms Long Valley, Washington Township, New Jersey. I'm buying words around the town.
How do you discover what terms make sense for that town? I mean, is it trial and error?
It's literally trial and error. No, I mean, you can't put in Washington Township, New Jersey and have Google. I mean, they'll give you some iterations of things, but it's such a small...
You don't use Google Suggest, in other words.
At the local level, no. At a big level, yes. I mean, mm-hmm. but still, that's a little art and science, and you can use a Suggest. And then I start buying generic terms like weather, lottery, tickets, literally events, local events, restaurants. And the only reason why I know that is because when I look at traffic on my own local blog, and I see the keywords that are coming through,
mm-hmm.
I notice that the keywords themselves are not always ones that are so obvious.
There isn't nobody's built a list of, like, the top 100 items people search for locally?
No, I haven't seen anything.
Let's make that list. That would be a valuable list to share, right?
But that's the way I would do it. I mean, you're literally searching on generic terms. You want generic terms. So people are always searching for weather. They're searching for local events in your own zip code. You know, town council minutes. I mean, literally, really nuts and bolts, basic words, because you have to be more broad on your keywords in order to try to interrupt them.
Right, but you're only looking for voters now.
Yes. But still, I mean, still, you don't know, if somebody, obviously, is searching for a campaign name, they're looking for information. But if you're trying to get in a town council race, and you're running this stuff, you literally have to buy, like, PNC Bank 07853.
Right.
And put an ad up there and hope you have some relevancy to keep the ad running. Because you need to be broader. It's an opposite strategy at the higher level. The lower level, you need broader.
You will let you try, right?
You can try, and then if your quality score is low, they'll bang you on the cost per click, and then you can decide whether it's worth running those or not.
Mm.
But you need to be broader on your keyword selection, not narrower as you slide down. It's an opposite.
Is it any different for an advocacy campaign than for a candidate?
Advocacy campaigns are different because, again, it's less likely they're going to be searching around the advocacy group, but you're searching around words. And so say, I don't know, I'm making this up. Say there's an advocacy campaign around astronomy. I don't know why.
Well, let's take a more relevant one. Let's take, energy.
Energy, I mean, the amount of words you could buy on energy, there's probably thousands and thousands of words you could buy around energy. And so that strategy is you have to group your energy words into smaller buckets, but you're going to have many of them. Because wind energy, solar energy.
Yeah. But if you're the Sierra Club, right?
Right.
I mean, do you think the Sierra Club as a standing strategy should have...
Yes.
Just be buying search terms every day. They have a standing bucket that they're working on.
The Sierra, if they're spending any money on newspaper ads, they should kill them and put them all on search.
Well, I doubt they're spending any money on newspaper.
But they should, then if they're spending money on TV, they should take at least 30% of their TV budget moving to online.
Okay. I have another question here from David Baker. What keywords would you recommend for targeting delegates for nomination on a state level rather than a general election?
That's a very interesting...
Delegates... I'm sorry, David, because delegates is such an unusual word. Not sure if he means actual like delegates to a convention,
right?
Party convention, or just people running on a state rather than a general.
Convention delegates for the party convention.
Very interesting.
And that one, I mean, that's actually a very interesting one. I didn't really do much around that.
We're talking now primary caucuses.
I mean, buying the names of those delegates is probably not going to be very helpful because the odds are you're probably not going to know them, but you would buy them anyway. So if you're buying them for the convention, you're probably still buying the presidential words.
Mm-hmm.
You're still probably trying, you're buying convention words, but instead that ad is now trying to get that traffic to talk about the delegates themselves. So click through to learn more about
you're answering his question correctly. It's actually fascinating to me. Why would you even?
I didn't do advertising
around the delegates to the party convention.
I don't know. There's probably a little bit more to his question. But the only way to do it is to advertise around the convention and around the presidential, not the nominees, the big names, and to try and get that traffic. Advertising the delegate names isn't going to help.
Not much, right? No. So, well, David, feel free to chime back in, but in the meantime, we have a question about the use of search in the Virginia gubernatorial race. Well, let's talk about the Google Surge, all right?
No, they like to call it Google Blast, but I call it the Surge.
Okay, well, you called it the Google Surge. At Tech President, we're writing about it as the Google Surge.
Thank you. I get credit. You get a trademark.
Is that right? You get a kick back each time.
Okay.
What is a Google Surge? Do you think this is, for real? And did they use it there? Are you convinced that that was a factor in Virginia?
I don't know. I mean, generally speaking, around the Surge, the reason why we called it the Surge is because we were working on Jindal's campaign.
Bobby
Jindal. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to have a huge get-out-the-vote message at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we called it a Surge is it's not a militaristic term, which is why I think some people don't like using it. It was literally a surge in spending.
Mm-hmm.
And Google will give you a list of sites that they recommend that covers 80-90% of the internet, and then literally what you do is you run your ads on them. You set a daily budget, and depending on what the state or zip code you're in, the surge will run your ads. We have our own proprietary list of sites because there are certain sites on Google's network that we're not going to run on, and so we remove them and we put our own in.
Mm-hmm.
And then even within a surge itself. They recommend cost per impression buys on it. It's the CPM buy usually, and those are usually flat. And I have my own again. I have my own way of mixing those up because there's certain sites that I won't bid over a certain amount.
Uh-huh.
MySpace, if I end up on them, I drive down the CPMs on them.
Why?
Well, because I know I can get it for a lot lower than what Google recommends.
Okay.
And then I won't say what I bid on that, but they're really really low, less than a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely less than a cup of coffee in New York City. And do I think it worked in Virginia? It probably did, because if that race was so tight and the primary was so many people that were running on the Democrat side, that running that surge at the last minute, because people start looking online at the last minute. I mean, we all like to think that everybody makes up their mind.
Well, the late deciders, obviously.
Yeah. And I've always, the hockey stick at the end. The traffic is literally a hockey stick.
Right.
So I think it does work. I think it does work towards the end. Again, you have to have the right message. You still have to have good creatives,
and you still
have to kind of know what you're doing on the search. But I think it works from a paid search perspective. I don't think the Virginia race ran a lot. I did see some stuff popping up for some reason in New Jersey. I don't know why anybody would have been running ads that I would see in New Jersey for Virginia. But I don't think from a paid they use a lot. Yeah, but from a search, I mean, clearly they use it at the end. And we use it a lot of different clients, too.
So, and back to David Baker's question. He says, what I was meaning was how should you try to target the delegates who decide the party nomination rather than targeting voters? Is there anything different that you should do, i.e. geo-targeting?
Well, if you know that there are certain delegates and you're trying to influence certain delegates in the zip code, you literally can draw a little zip code, little map around, or just target their zip code. If you knew their IP addresses, you can also do that. But you literally can do geo-targeting at the VPN.
If you know someone's IP address, you can target an ad just to them.
You can do some IP targeting, too, yeah.
This is scary. Okay, so if you wanted to just target ads to Congress, for example.
If you knew the IP address,
well,
you could
get the IP address for the House.
You could do it for
I mean, when the government agencies, many of them just have unique IP address for the entire institution.
I think
or multiple IP addresses.
There's multiple. I believe
yes.
somebody, I thought of Michael
People
Bassett.
People have done this.
I've done it before.
Yes.
So it is, you can do it. So you literally can target their zip code with ads.
All right, so this gets to one question I was going to ask, but someone may be jumping in. Does somebody want to get in? Nope? Okay. So, Henri, we'll come back. Oh, well, all right.
That's a good question there.
It's a good question. Do you think Google Insight Trends will back up the effectiveness of the surge of the blast? So explain Google Insight and Trends for those who don't know.
I mean, using Insight and Trends is literally their tool that they can give you that will look at search trends over time in a particular zip code or a particular area. And they like to use that as a way of saying how effective your advertising is inside an area.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I've never tried to pitch somebody as that's how you can tell how effective your surge is or not. I usually show the results of a surge based on impressions that are being run at a CPM level. I measure by clicks onto the website and I show that over time. And if there's any actions that I'm trying to measure on the back end, I'll show. But usually I don't try and prove things with Google Insight on the back end. They like to use it, but the problem is that it's too much of a macro level to prove the effectiveness of, say, I mean, they probably spent I don't know what they spent, but I'm guessing. They probably spent about $25,000 on that surge in Virginia if they ran it for a few days.
Well, they're going to get free press on it, too, which is another thing.
Yeah,
forget. We're getting down to the last 10 minutes or so, but I have some fun questions for you. The first one is about targeting incumbents with message campaigns and whether incumbents should play defense as well. So, for example, the Drum Major Institute here in New York developed something called the Middle Class Report Card.
Okay.
And it gave every member of Congress a grade, a plus, a minus, and so on. And then they bought every member's name and ran ads against them. And that's both assuming the member Googles themselves,
right?
As well as trying to reach their constituents.
Right.
Not a bad strategy.
Right. No, it's a good strategy, yeah.
Should incumbents be, like, thinking about standing search terms on themselves, the same way
yeah.
the Sierra Club?
Yeah.
Does anybody do it?
Not everybody does it. They should. I mean, standing members of Congress, if you have to make the assumption that somebody's buying those words to show a grade, get so-and-so's grade on whatever, taxes or the environment. I think they should be running some campaigns around, you know, something simple as, you know, get the facts.
Here's my position.
And leave that. I don't know if that's playing defense so much as making sure that somebody searching on it, they see that ad, that they can go get the information.
Have you tried to make the case to members, incumbents, that they need to do this?
No, not so much.
No.
I mean, usually locally, I've tried in New Jersey.
Okay.
Doesn't.
And what would you think of somebody doing a very targeted campaign that is really aimed at? I mean, the same way that I can Twitter Chuck Grassley directly or Claire McCaskill. Do you think that advocacy groups should be doing search marketing campaigns to drive members of Congress and their staff? You know, a little bonkers. I mean, you could search, you know, one thing we know everybody does is they Google themselves.
Right?
I mean, do you think there's a reason to do that, or are we now, you know, getting down? I mean, this is one-to-one marketing.
Right.
You think it would be effective or just a nuisance?
The nuisance is if you're the you're
true to a member who you're targeting, right? You've got swing votes on the Waxman Markey energy bill, right? Or in the health bill, they're going to go after some swing votes.
They should be doing that marketing, and it should be a nuisance to the person that's having the ads run against.
As opposed to the targeted TV ads,
right,
which is what they all do now.
They should be doing that because people are going to go online and they're going to search for it, and you might as well interrupt them while they're searching on it, rather than trying to put the ad in front of them.
Okay, so this is completely virgin territory.
Yes, I don't see a lot of. So
okay.
One more.
All right, we have another question from Michael. What type of technology do you or your firm use for the Yes on Prop 8 campaign on Yahoo immediately before the before Election Day? Okay, good question.
Usually, I mean, the technology, I mean, we worked with Yahoo to come up with the targets and the geo-targeting that we were going to do. And then with Yahoo, it's a little bit more robust than the behavioral targeting that you could pick up and then on the content side. So literally, you would, not just on Pop 8, but for anybody, if you're going to go to Yahoo or MSN or some of the other bigger networks, there's a lot more behavioral targeting information.
Right, which Google doesn't do.
Which Google does not do.
Right.
Google is usually limited to age, gender, demo, some demos, some geos, but it's not as robust as the stuff that you can get on Yahoo. I mean, your Yahoo account person give you all sorts of different targeting.
Right, which creeps me out a bit more.
It does creep you out a little bit more, yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you fully answered Michael's question.
I tried to. I wasn't trying to duck Michael's question, but from a technology standpoint, it's Yahoo's technology that we were using. We were not employing our own technology for that.
Okay. So I actually want to pull the lens back a little bit. Since, I mean, you swim in this space, like, you know, I mean, you're every day you're picking up, and I know you've been blogging more generally and not just about online advertising. You're talking about the New Jersey gubernatorial race where the Republican primary just finished, and now we have a general that's coming up. And you were talking about online social networks and that what sort of approach campaigns should be taking there. I mean, what do you think now going forward? And since you work so much with Republicans, I mean, the perception is that the Democrats have a leg up now in terms of online politics. Do you agree with that? And where do you think the Republicans either, A, are on a par, or B, need to catch up? What would you recommend they do that you're not seeing?
I would rather see more. I mean, what I don't see people doing, which I think that the Democrats have done a better job, is at least in the social networking and attracting more of a youth vote. And I think they got that faster than we got it. I still don't see a lot of people really embracing, especially Facebook, using Facebook as it's such an easy one, but trying to get involved with more widgets and trying to get people involved with the whole idea that if I can get a friend to blast out some action that they took to their network, that's a very powerful thing. But the problem is that most people, when they're in corporate America and they're working and they have kids, the amount of time they're spending online, I mean, I get people asking all the time, I go to my son's baseball game, like, oh, my God, you're on Facebook all the time. I said, no, actually, I'm not. I'm on Twitter. I have my Twitter hooked into Facebook, and I got Twitter from my iPhone.
And they already look like you're from another planet.
Right, like another planet. And these are all people that are voters and go, you know, everybody target. But, you know, I think the Democrats got more of a youth, had a more of a youth message, and by having that more youth message, you had to embrace more tools online, and I think that's where they have a leg up. But again, I don't know how. I mean, I think it's an easy way to catch up. This isn't like you have a monopoly on something on the knowledge. There's people that have
right.
the knowledge.
Right.
So I think in the 2008 election, it was you had the perfect candidate with the perfect message who attracted people that normally would blast out to a network and would do more grassroots organizing, especially online. So,
and MySpace versus Facebook, actually one of the speakers we're going to have at PDF at the end of this month at the conference, Dana Boyd, and just give people a little preview here, is going to talk about one of the less talked about effects of these different online social networks.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook is for college students. For kids who are heading to college, it was born at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that upper middle class sheen.
Right.
And MySpace is for everybody else. Do you think that there's like a kind of split going on here, and to the degree that politicians, they all talk about their Facebook page, but you don't hear that many of them talk about MySpace.
Right.
I mean, is there some demographic that's being missed here, or are we, you know, I mean, I'm just curious what you think of this.
Well, generally speaking, if you visit my blog going back many years, I believe MySpace was the year 2000 version of GeoCities.
Okay.
And I still firmly believe that, and I think other people are now noticing that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think Facebook, that is true to the extent that it was born out of college and mostly it was for college people. But as they opened up the network and as people are having kids that are now embracing it, and other parents have to get involved in Facebook, and that's where I run into more and more people. I think Facebook's becoming more for the masses.
Yeah.
And I really believe MySpace is marginalizing themselves into a certain group of folks that are, it's not the Facebook. I think the Facebook audience is more going to become more of a snapshot of what America looks like, and I don't think it was MySpace.
Huh.
I've never been a MySpace fan, so from day one, if you visited my MySpace page, you will find nothing on it. And it's been there for a long time with nothing on it.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I mean, there's still, I think you've just dissed more than 100 million MySpace.
I'm fine with that, I'm sorry.
But that's all right, we'll just send them your email address and they can micro-target you.
Yeah, it's okay, I'm sorry, I apologize.
But, no, I think it's an open question, actually. And, you know, Dana is probably the world's leading expert. She's at Microsoft Research now.
Yeah.
On online social network culture. Which is bigger than just politics.
Yeah.
And it really is one of these things that as we all build this new digital space that we now, you know, it's merging with the rest of our lives.
Right.
That there may be these unseen effects that we don't even realize. You know, that we may be creating two classes here where maybe Facebook will become the de facto place where everybody has an address, and socializes to some degree. We're almost done. I'm going to give the group on, if anybody is there who wants to ask the last question, otherwise we're going to close down. So you've got speak now, forever hold your peace, 10 seconds to text something in.
Let's see. Well, that's not such a bad typer.
No. But if not, that's fine. We've spent a really fascinating hour with Eric Frenchman. I want to thank everybody for being on the call, especially thank AT&T and the Vivings Group. As you know, this call will be archived and available online on personaldemocracy.com. Our next call, Endel, is in 2 weeks with Steve Grove from YouTube, who's going to talk with us about best practices for making your online political video sell. And we'll all at the PDF conference, which is just 3 weeks away.
Can't wait.
So thanks a lot, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank